Hey there, Rooster Teeth fans. Welcome to another episode of the Ruby After Show on AfterBuzz TV. Tonight, we are talking about Volume 5, Chapter 10, True Colors. We've got a fun show tonight. Stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
I see your true colors. That's not the song that we're opening with, but...
But you see them nonetheless.
Every time I see a title show with that particular title, Phil Collins just starts playing in my head.
It's ingrained. It is.
Yeah, it's like Pavlovian at this point. But anyway, guys. Hi, guys. Hey, Rooster Teeth fans. I hope everybody had a wonderful holiday, and I hope everybody's having a fantastic new year so far. Tonight, we are talking about True Colors, episode of Ruby. Guys, before we get started, want to emphasize real quick again, before we even do our introductions, no spoilers for Chapter 11 in chat or in the comments. We'll know if you do it.
Yeah, I will.
Very upset with you.
We are three, not four. Do you want to talk about that?
Well, no. Let's go ahead.
Okay, all right, yeah.
Regular introduction.
There's a reason.
Well, no, it's all right.
Yeah.
but anyway, hi, Ruby fans. I'm Megan Salinas. You guys can tweet at me at the Menguin. That's THEMENGUIN. And to my left is the lovely Stacey Shuttleworth.
Hey, guys, I'm Stacey Shuttleworth. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, all over the web, at Stacey Shuttles.
To her left, Mark Donica.
Hi, I'm Mark B. Donica. You can find me on Twitter at Mark B. Donica. And just because I'm in the sage, to my far all around the left.
Megan again.
It's Megan!
Patrick and Katie are not able to join us tonight, but be sure to follow them on Twitter, at P to the D's for Patrick, and at Kia J for Katie. So yeah, guys, let's, again... No spoilers for Chapter 11, guys.
As Malachroma, my mic's being weird. As Malachroma in chat says, people who post spoilers get eaten by dinosaurs.
Indeed, they do. But yes, so guys, this episode, I feel like, was one of the most emotionally charged episodes I think we've gotten all volume. Maybe Chapter 11 proves me completely wrong in that regard.
No spoilers.
Well, I would like to appreciate the charged pun that you went for.
Oh,
with the
Lord.
Electro sword.
I wasn't even trying, but you're right.
You would catch that. You would.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a good as one would say in a puppet universe, it was a good try. But your name isn't Ron. Anyway.
No. Severus Snape is more like it. but I just wanted to get your guys' initial thoughts on this episode.
We've been building up to that emotional, like, just...
That emotional clash,
that,
yeah.
God, yeah, for a while, so to see it happen sooner than I expected, but...
And what a performance.
Yes.
In terms of side characters, Ilya's quickly has been... backed by one of the strongest performers that I think Ruby, the show Ruby, has had the benefit to have. And the performance of Ilya, ranging all the way from anger to confusion to acceptance to more confusion, but friendly confusion, was standout. As Kane's child in chat is pointing out, gunchucks. First time in a minute we got to see the gunchucks come out. I would like to thank past self. Thanks, past Mark, for adjusting the prediction that one of the brothers was going down instead of my gross, terrifying prediction that still could come true of either Sun or Gira going down.
Like, not even gonna lie, when it happened, that moment, my jaw was on the floor, but at the same time, once it was over, I did breathe a sigh of relief. I was like, oh, thank God.
We've had the death episode. It's okay now.
Especially when Gira got stabbed right in the back, but his reaction was like, oh, no. But
what is no?
But I think my favorite thing about that is that reminded me of like some Planet Earth footage of a smaller, like, scrappy animal going after a big cat.
Yeah.
You jump in the middle of their blind spot and you attack them in a place where they can't knock you off. So it was super animalistic, but still a human fight where somebody got stabbed in the back by a magical fire dagger.
I was very concerned when he got stabbed in the back. I thought maybe he had a punctured lung, but I guess Gira just has, like, I don't know, maybe a solid foot of muscle in his back.
Protecting those muscles, yeah.
That's a lot of muscle.
He's That's a very muscular man.
And yet accurate.
He didn't have a punctured lung. Mm. It looked like his shoulder was all right. The man was fine.
Full range of movement, we were good.
Yeah, if anything, it was just kind of a mild annoyance more than anything else.
Slightly irritated and shook it off.
Yeah, but Mark, I have to concur with you. Sharmi Lee's performance for Ilya in this episode, and Aaron's too for Blake, both of them were just absolutely
Brothers of the White Fang! We've come a long way from that. It's an amazing performance. Yeah.
Yeah, so, and... All right, so yeah, let's go ahead and talk about this from the get-go, because... Since we're already talking about it, let's focus on the attack on the Belladonna compound, because this fight, this confrontation between Ilya and Blake is what we've been building up to for a couple episodes. Did you guys have a standout moment in the fight where you would highlight it as your favorite moment from the fight?
Between the two of them?
Yeah.
You asked for clarification, was like, I'm going to go first. I would probably have to say Blake's like, sorry, Dad, and setting the bloody house on fire just to get visibility on Ilya. That was really smart. That was the opposite of running away. Like, she could have run to a place that had more light, but then she would have left Ilya to do her own devices, whatever. But then also Ilya's strategy of also, first of all, mood lighting. The thing on the wall.
The flame is also mood lighting.
Yeah,
right?
By the firelight? Let's light a candle. Malachrome in chat. Humans didn't do this. Faunus did this. Specifically, I did this.
This one's on me.
Sorry, everybody.
Yeah, that was definitely my fault.
But an army. Does anybody want to...
It worked.
But yeah, there's a lot of cool choreography with the fight.
Yeah, they're both so nimble. So there was a couple sequences in particular, just the way that they move in relation to each other. And you can tell that they have a familiarity with each other's fighting styles, too. And they kind of dance around each other with that. I thought that was a really... interesting thing to watch. Yeah.
Something I didn't notice in some of their previous altercations is that they both have very similar weapons in that they're meant for both close quarters combat and distance fighting. Mm-hmm. So it's like you can definitely tell in this particular skirmish that they most definitely had very similar training in their upbringing within the White Fang. And to see that come to a head here is really cool. I think probably my favorite moment is definitely just that moment where Blake is crouching down with the flames behind her. Like, the lighting there, the camera angle, all of that was really great. But also just shout out to the team for the fluid camera work for the entire fight scene as a whole. Like, it's not something I notice when I'm, like, watching it the first time around, but... going back and rewatching it again, just seeing the way the camera follows them, it's hypnotizing. It's really awesome.
We got our first piece of art for the show.
Oh!
From Malachroma. Using the hashtag RubyABTV. It is the Fennec Albane pancake mix.
Oh!
From the makers of Pancake Pete, or I'm sorry, Pumpkin Pete's. You will get your very own Fennec original pancake mix. Just like Mom used to make a menagerie, that is the Fennec Albane pancake mix. Pick it up at your local store, and may God have mercy on your soul.
Yeah, can we take a moment to appreciate how his death scene was basically a moment out of a Roadrunner Wile E. Coyote cartoon?
Except with far more dire consequences.
Like, yeah. It was the equivalent of, like, when, you know, a giant boulder falls on Wile E. Coyote, and then it exploded. Like, if that pillar had just said Acme on it.
And more homework has been made.
Oh, Lord. Oh, but I have to agree with you, Stacey. I did not see this death coming. Mark called it, but I definitely didn't see this one coming.
I didn't think it was going to be Fennec, to be honest. When I did call that one of the... I thought it was going to be the other one, but that, I think, made it that much more shocking, so to speak.
Maybe... Oh, how about you?
I was just agreeing.
Now, maybe this is better saved for predictions, but because Fennec is now gone and Corsic has been apprehended, he's still alive and probably really mad. Is he a potential player for later on down the road, or do you, like, in the same way that Neo is a potential player for somewhere down the road, or do we think that we're sort of done with that element of the White Fang subplot?
I think if the way that they're kind of going in Menagerie, they'll probably have a pretty good handle on him. However, he was knocked unconscious when that whole thing went down, so he doesn't know exactly how it happened either, right? Like, he could be under the impression that it was a completely malicious, on purpose, they did this to him.
They murdered him.
Meaning to do this kind of situation. So there could be a lot of rage and resentment there that will get him stopping at nothing.
I think one of two things could happen. One, that's it. Or two, if everybody's leaving the country to go fight in this battle, there's some room. There could be some room for improvement while they're gone for however long they're going to be gone for.
Yeah.
And there could just be him, like Hannibal Lecter-esque style. Or, never mind. I'm not going to make an X-Ray and Vav joke. But... like the Mad King trying to break our heroes apart. But sort of a thing where he's in prison, but he's like, what are they having you do? Come on. We know better. Brother. Can I call you brother? Doesn't matter. I'm going to call you
brother. I lost my brother.
I lost my brother. I was about to say something that could have been highly misconstrued. Never mind. Tumblr would have had a field day. But that sort of thing where it depends on what they want to use him for.
Yeah. It'll be interesting. I feel like for right now, if he does come back, we won't see him for maybe two volumes. And so part of me wants to say, you know, the subplot is done, but at the same time, it's like they left him alive. It could be that they're like, if there's a place for him in the story, we'll come back to him. But if not, it's wrapped up in a nice little bow.
Freelancer Emma in chat says, "My brother is dead. You are my brother now."
He's just collecting new guards as his brothers.
Brother!
If you want to go grimdark, yeah, he just goes crazy in jail.
Brothers!
Takes a horribly sad turn.
Oh, boy.
Like, he's like, he goes crazy and starts hallucinating, and he's like, "Isn't that right, brother?" And he's talking to, like, no one in the corner. See? Finnick agrees with me.
Gross.
That's upsetting. I also want to just point out how much I love Kali in this attack.
All the time?
All the greatest. But she was just spectacular in this episode.
Yeah, she was.
I think, and it also, it amuses me to no end that basically we have a Catwoman beat a Batman. I am pleased as punch. By that.
Beautiful. I didn't even think about it that way. Wonderful.
Malachrome agrees.
Wonderful.
That Kali is best mom. Yeah.
She is best mom.
Well, I mean, compared to the two moms we've met. Three moms we've met, because we've technically met Ren's mom too.
That's true, but out of the remaining living mothers are in...
or sober mothers.
In their children's lives.
I was going to say, Mama Schnee is hanging out in the garden, definitely drinking.
Brenda. Checked out there.
Raven, we'll get to in a minute.
That's not even a fair balance.
No. Basically, Kali is mom of the year, for sure.
Mara Lewis and Kane's child are hopefully I'm reading that right, are both bringing up that just like a cat, she drug her kill to show her as like a gift. Look what I did.
Look what I brought the family.
I brought you a present.
I also love that when Blake goes to make her speech, Gira initially goes to stop her and Kali just holds a hand up. And you really do get the height discrepancy, which is always evident, but even more so there. She only comes up to his chest and she can still like be like, nah, honey, she's got this.
Full stop and power.
I will just say, referencing my own life, it's pretty accurate. My own life and wife, it's pretty accurate.
That's very true.
Yeah.
Mrs. Donica, yeah, comes up to about here,
Mrs.
right?
Donica is my mother. but yes. yeah, it was a good blow off, and they've trained us to expect the absolute worst.
Yes.
Whereas it came out pretty well.
Yeah.
That worked out in
our favor. One death.
Oh,
only
God.
One death.
Well, what's coming up?
I feel like a lot of guards died. One character death. But definitely a lot of guards died.
So one important person. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. That's awful. That's awful.
One is good. We're good.
Yeah, one. No more.
Great.
It's not like we have.
Although,
we're as we get closer to the episode, our anxiety just ramps
just constantly.
Up. For some reason, you can't sleep on Friday night. Just for fear.
You're just tossing and turning, thinking about who's the next character that's gonna bite it, and then you get to an episode like this, and you're like, oh, hey. That wasn't so bad.
And Malakoma brings up a good point. Kim Newman's work on the gunchucks.
Yes.
People, I say quote fans, but viewers, various viewers of Ruby, tend to bring up with the various changes since the untimely passing of Monty, how some of the fights don't feel... You know, they weren't the same fights that got us interested in the series in the first place. And now with the new animation style, it's a lot harder to convey that fast-paced action, music video-esque style. But with the animation that came with these gunchucks, it's like, no, they function the exact same way as they did. They look and feel the exact same way that they did in season one. It's been that long. And the fights are just... different.
Yeah.
And until we reach an episode where there's a lot of fights, we can't really describe it.
Honestly, I know it's an ongoing critique of the show in its current incarnation, but I think the animation's never been better, and as far as the fight choreography goes, yes, Monty's touch was wholly unique, mm-hmm. but that doesn't make the fighting in the show at the moment bad
or less important
or less impressive. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I think there was one moment during the fight where Ilya spun around with her whip, and it was the combination of the lighting, the camera movement, the character expressions, and the vocal performance. I was like, dang, we have come a long way, and the show is going to continue to grow and evolve and change. And guys, change isn't inherently bad.
Or inherently good, for that matter.
Yeah.
But change, it just in its nature, isn't consistent.
Yeah.
And now it's really getting to the point where the camera is becoming its own character. And we're getting creative shots that we can't get, which is why we turn to animation. It's not just same over-the-shoulder, two-shot, mid-shot, extreme close-up. No, with this type of action, you can really get right up into it because you don't physically have a camera there. So we're getting there, and this whole fight was just awesome.
Yeah, I feel like one of the reasons why... maybe you guys have a different take on it, but one of the reasons why I got into anime in particular was because it had such a unique visual identity compared to everything else I had seen prior to that. And this show, with the camera becoming a character and with the ever-evolving animation style, it has developed. It's always had a great visual identity, but to see that visual identity evolving is really cool and really interesting. And I have a lot of faith in where they're going, for sure.
I agree. And I mean, I think it lets us kind of dig even a little deeper as fans, too. We're following and we're watching this evolution happen. We can kind of track the progress and track where we've been and where we're going.
Agreed. Brody Kimberlin in chat says, this is a show with a background story of keep moving forward.
Yes.
Change will happen, like it or not.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
It's sort of like a criticism, like in terms of that as a critique. I feel like I feel the same way when I look at long-running franchises based on nostalgia, like Star Wars and other things, like other like long-running video game series, things like that, where people's nostalgia sort of tints what their view of the product in its current incarnation. And it's like, hey guys, again, just change isn't inherently bad or good. Just keep that in mind as you consume products as franchises continue. And speaking of Star Wars, Blake's speech at the end, I feel like, mirrors one of the plot lines in The Last Jedi, which I won't go too into detail. But I love that Blake's, you know, the moral of it was, if you are neutral in this conflict, you're basically siding with people that choose to speak for you through violence. If you don't speak out against it, you're basically condoning it. And I really appreciated that that's kind of the final push that the Faunus needed to be like, hey, we should do something.
Yeah, I like that that has become the important message to focus on, and that's kind of the rallying cry. Not so much fighting back as just having your own stake in it, showing your own stake in it in something. Mm-hmm.
Agreed. Yeah, I my favorite part from that sequence was, I'll stand with you, and the one person in the crowd going,
what? Like, there's this really dramatic thing happening, and then all of a sudden you just hear somebody like, wasn't that a girl that was like super making a scene at like the press conference the other day? Like, oh my god. You still take time to gossip. Yeah.
Can't help it sometimes, all right?
Camille and Chet says, she doesn't even go here.
If you'll have me.
Tuxanuba 1990 says, we are the spark that will light the fire that will burn down the White Fang.
Yeah! Nice. I love it. Mm-hmm. And again, there's also that wonderful little just message about forgiveness as well, and how powerful that can be. And we talked a lot about Ilya as a character on the last episode, and about whether or not her being an antagonist was problematic. And I really like what they've done here. You know, she's not a perfect person, but at the same time, she was lost. She didn't know what to do, and she had no direction, and she's picked a different direction now. So that's not to say that she'll always continue to pick that particular direction, but I like where they're going with it now.
Yeah, well, she took an open-minded approach. She kind of let herself explore, oh, well, there is another way, maybe, and, you know, is going to explore it instead of just sticking with what she thought was working.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm just trying to be attentive.
I was going to say, also not to, in addition to the awesome gunchucks, Sun was just in top form in this episode with his doppelgangers and just that little moment he and Ilya had at the end there.
Mm-hmm. He's great. I never felt very strongly one way or the other for Sun. Like earlier, I know people had very fiery opinions one way or the other concerning him. But this past season has really cemented him as like just such an endearing, wonderful character. And so that little moment, and poor Ilya, she's like, oh god, what's gonna happen? He's gonna hate me forever.
You
like,
stabbed me.
he can't help himself but to point it out because that's Sun. But also he's gonna get over it.
Because Sun is Sun.
Because it's also Sun.
He's like, Blake says you're cool, so you're probably cool.
Fun fact, the Sun / Blake / Ilya ship is Rainforest.
Because it's... Okay, I got you.
I'd also call it the Jungle Book.
Is that because it's got, like, rainbow, in terms of rainforest, is that because it's got, like, rainbow, like Ilya, and also there's a lot of throwing shade?
Hey, 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 hey.
Not a fan of the things I just said.
So they were talking about this a little bit in chat earlier, and I wanted to bring it up to y'all.
Absolutely.
this sort of showed me, like, do you think that there's any ambiguity with how, with an age discrepancy between Ilya and Blake? Because to me, it seems like Ilya is a little bit younger, like maybe a year or two.
I think a little bit, not a huge, but not a huge amount.
She's because she was very much is acting like a child. Mm-hmm. But there are adults who act like children.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily inherent of age, but it seems more of a senpai kohai thing, well, of somebody to look up to.
We also don't know how old she was when she lost her parents. And she did go away to school. We don't know what age she was when she went away to school. So she was away from her parents and then lost them. Mm-hmm. There, so we don't know how long she's been going without parental guidance, so to speak. So, yeah, you can act a little bit more infantile when that's the case. But especially when you're given free rein and you run off and hang out with a bunch of, like, pirates and, you know,
right.
Terrorists, I guess. Yeah,
if you don't have the responsibilities to kind of develop more maturity as you go or feel the need to, then...
So, there might be an age discrepancy there, but, yeah, I agree. I don't think it's huge if there is one. Because they're obviously close enough in age to have relatively the same level of experience. So, right. When it comes to fighting and combat and all that other stuff... do we have any more thoughts on the menagerie side of things? Because I think my final thought is that's going to be one awkward boat ride. Because yeah. It's like, what, 2 weeks on a boat with, like, the person who burned down your house and tried to kill your family?
Yeah. Nothing more on the menagerie part, but I think before we get to the... I'm sorry. Did you have anything else that you want to say about menagerie? Sorry. I think we should do our break stuff before we get to the second half.
That sounds good.
Just because I saw how you put the show up together. I'm trying not to, like, rise against you.
No. I only put that there as, like, a note as a don't forget it.
That's, okay.
None of this has to be in sequential order.
None of this is canon. All right, so we're going to start off, before we talk about the second part of the episode, we got a wonderful gift.
We did!
Now we get a lot of fan art, and we get a lot of fan art about stuff that we talk about, and we are appreciative of it. 24-hour call center, we are appreciative to them. Malachroma, we are appreciative to them. Anybody that submits art to us, we absolutely love you. We absolutely adore you. A couple weeks ago, though, we were talking about magical girls. And as a result, S Chessboard on Twitter, let's take a look at this first one, sent us, and I just because the other one that was sent to me was so wide, I had to split them up.
No worries.
This first one is Megan on the left, Katie in the middle, and me on the right as an actual magical girl. As Akka from Little Witch Academia.
Marcus' best girl. Aww.
And I mean, she never had a familiar, but I guess the Black Lion is my familiar, I suppose. That's synergy. But then this next one is Stacy as Sailor Diva.
I love it.
And,
it's so great.
The immortalized tuxedo mark.
With the raccoon,
because I swear, if you fight me, if you think that the Ginyu Force is not a group of magical girls, they transform. That's all I'm saying.
They are absolutely a Sentai group. Although, looking at it now, I'm like, was Raccoon's pose the reverse dab all this time?
No, it's Hogan. It's Hogan. Like, the classic Hogan pose, just
okay.
From the back. Yeah, yeah,
okay,
yeah.
I thought it was maybe like, somebody was like, oh, I want to do, like, the raccoon pose, but I want to make it my own, and so they did, like, a dab instead.
That's how the dab was born.
And Malachroma nailed it before I had a chance to say it. Katie was a Bryxen, which is the mid... either the mid or the final evolution... No, the middle evolution of the Fennec Fox, who I also forget the actual name of, which I think was just Fennec. Or Finnick.
Yes,
something like that.
Thank you again to Jester's Chessboard. That's at S Chessboard on Twitter. This was a wonderful way to cap off 2017 and to start 2018. It's like, this is my profile picture now. I loved it so much. So thank you to Jester's Chessboard and to everybody who contributes art for this show. It is always fantastic seeing what you guys come up with.
And I have to say, never did I expect to be drawn as a little girl at a magical academy. And never have I been so flattered to be drawn as a little girl at a magical academy, complete with my crappy facial hair. But I can't tell you how wonderful it made me feel. So thank you, S. Chessboard. And thank you to everybody who submits art. We're not, we will do this as it happens, but to S. Chessboard, thank you, because this was just lovely.
I've never been a magical girl before, and it got me all for
clever. P.S. We've always been magical girls.
The power was inside us all along.
The whole time.
But we also want to talk to you guys really quickly about iTunes. Folks, thank you to everybody who's gone to iTunes to rate, subscribe, leave a comment. We love hearing from you, and it is the best way to let our producers know that you guys like the show that we're putting on and that you guys like hearing about us talk about Rooster Teeth content. And when you guys do, you might even get a shout out on the show.
Like so. So because in case you missed it, our December 20th episode, we had Sam Ireland on. We talked about Wolves Inside, which was successfully funded with an extra $2,000. Y'all are awesome. Y'all are wonderful.
Yes.
I'm sort of thrown off on where we left off from these, so I'm going to... I think we read this one, but just in case, I'm going to read it again. From Jedi Neptune, my favorite non-Rooster Teeth podcast. Hey, we technically are. It's that asterisk, baby. I've been listening to this podcast since I found Ruby around episode 8 of Volume 1. Meeting you guys at RTX Austin this year was one of the highlights of my year. I love listening to the analysis and theories and adding my own twists and adding them with my friends. Keep being awesome people. A brilliant podcast from Malakrama.
I don't know who that would be.
That's a weird name. I got into the Rooster Team's work with ABTV during RVB season 13 and followed them into Ruby season 3. I haven't dropped them since. They never fail to entertain, and the community in the live chat is one of the most delightful fan communities I have had the pleasure of interacting with. Every episode is a treat, and now that the podcast is weekly, I can come home from work every Wednesday excited to see what the Rooster Team has in store, listening to their theories and analyses and sharing my own. If you're looking for a Ruby fan podcast with a table full of brilliant, insightful people and Mark, that's weird. I'm kidding. They didn't write that. This is a cast for you. Signed Malakrama. A genuine and humorous... It gets cut off because I'm reading off of mobile. Standing by life. I actually found this podcast by accident before season 3 came out from the Ruby Wiki page. Are we on the Ruby Wiki?
What?
Wait a minute. Are we on the Ruby Wiki? Can everybody...
Can someone confirm or deny?
Put that in the hashtag, please. I love how animated everybody talks in this show, and even now, the live chat community is one of the most hilarious, insightful, and witty I've ever come across, and one I'm not shy chatting with. Which, by the way, shout out to Malakrama for their sharp perspective and artwork. You never fail to put a smile on my face. Aww. Every episode is delightful. They're meaningful and fueled with jokes, theories, and relatable situations. I enjoy every theory and analysis while sometimes throwing in my own. If you're new to the Ruby community or want to talk about Ruby with fans and looking for a fantastic fan podcast, look no further. This podcast is for you. The cast is enthusiastic with laughs that will keep you smiling. I will always look forward to the days when the podcast comes on. It definitely brightens up my days and has me coming back for more. P.S. Thanks for the shout outs from when I was ordinary passerbyer to now. Thanks again, Standing by Life. Last one, love you guys from 0_4. Love you guys and love Katie and Megan's reactions. I noticed something looking back at chapter 4. Did you notice there were no children in Raven's camp? It could be that children aren't allowed in the tribe, and Raven might not have Yang with her, not because she didn't want to, but because she couldn't, As we know, children can be very emotional, and the tribe might feel that children would just attract more Grimm.
That's a fair assessment.
Solid theory. Yeah. So a lot of love and theories. Oh, but this isn't a Twitter shout, or this isn't a review, but I did want to shout out because while we weren't on YouTube last week, we were on Twitch last week.
Yes!
We streamed the second half of Ruby Grimm Eclipse. It was Stacy, it was myself, and it was Katie who was joining us for this. And we tried getting Malakrama on, and their computer had varying levels of success. But we had our Discord channel open, which was open to anybody who could have come in, and we had the distinct pleasure of a wonderful listener by the name of Trenton Dixon, who is on Twitter at TrentonDixon5, come in and essentially be our moderator. Like, I was trying to focus on the chat as well as the Discord as well as the game, but Trenton came in, got to ask all of the questions that he wanted to ask, and then also was filtering questions from the chat. It was very helpful, and he's a very cool dude. So thank you, Trenton, and thank you to everybody who left iTunes reviews. If you want yours read, please leave us a review. It helps us get seen, though I think we're doing pretty well. The fact that you can type in Rooster Teeth and we're the first thing that comes up after, like, Rooster Teeth proper. It was a marketing decision.
And we do pay attention to the hashtag all week long. That's RWBYABTV. So if you guys just have so many feelings from week to week, feel free to use that at any time. But again, no spoilers. Mm. Be cool about public releases, guys. Anyway, all right, let's. I feel like talking about Raven. That's a good segue to move on over back to Haven for this part of the episode. And here we have Ruby sort of walking in on Crow and Oz having a little bit of a discussion. And she asks, I think, something that's been on our mind since we found out that, like, Oz was alive, was like, okay, so what did he do with the relic? So he says it's stored away, it's safe, or safer than the one that's here at Haven anyway. Now, he promised to be honest.
He did.
And yet he provided no details.
No.
What do we think about that? Is it better that Ruby doesn't know, or do we find it weird that she didn't probe him a little bit more?
I mean, I guess she still more or less has an implicit trust, you know, in the people that have proven ally to her and have proven friend. So I guess if he didn't offer, she's not exactly the type to really get into the questioning.
Like, you could tell she was uncomfortable even interrupting them at this particular moment. She was like, when I used to walk into my boss's office going, hey, how is everything? Can I come
What
on
do you
in?
Want?
Should I walk away
Tell
now?
Me what you want.
I don't know. What do you think, Mark?
Well, there was an interesting theory that I didn't really think much of until I really thought about it. Because there's the theory that John's great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather, who was the king, gave his sword from all the way then to now,
mm-hmm.
and somebody in chat, I want to properly, I don't...
Properly credit the
yeah,
theory.
Properly credit, but I can't see it. Either way, somebody thought, somebody said that John's the relic, and I went, wait a minute, what if his sword is the relic?
Hmm.
And giving acts, and this is like super spiritual and super blah, kind of a thing. Now, the plan was to make Pyrrha the maiden.
Mm-hmm.
Pyrrha and John were inseparable. And now Pyrrha is always with John. So in some way, shape, or form, the maiden is protecting the relic. And this also sort of validates the fact that John is a maiden? Could be a maiden? And he could be protecting the
you
relic.
You just really need this
hey,
to come to fruition.
I believe if Let's I can, see. If we can go back to the tape about a minute ago, I believe I said.
Now,
in some way, shape, or form,
would this explain why Jean was allowed into Beacon Academy in the first place? Because we know he cheated his way in, and Ozpin's not a fool. For all of his mistakes and bad decisions, we know he's not an idiot. We know that he probably most likely knew about Jean cheating and lying to get in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I definitely think there's an underlying reason why he was like, all right, carry on. I'm going to look the other way.
You know, you're cheating, but I think this would be funny. It's going to be real funny when we launch him off a cliff.
I've been a little bored the past couple of years. Let's see what happens.
Professor Ozpin, why did you accept me into Beacon? For the lulls, Mr. Ark. For the lulls.
Now I need Oz actually to say.
Yeah.
I need
it.
That's an interesting theory. I don't necessarily think that's where we're going. Although, since a maiden is required to retrieve the relic, it could be that his weapon is the relic, but it is inert until the Fall Maiden gets a hold of it.
There's some sort of a core in it. But I believe I'm really sorry. The chat was moving really fast. Mara Lewis says, which would also explain why Tyrion said that Jon interests him.
You're interesting. Yeah,
Malachroma, that would make the addition of Pyrrha's circlet much more prevalent.
Thank you for validating me.
But it's good.
I think it would be funny if he's like, oh, don't worry, Miss Rose. I have ensured that the relic is very difficult to get to. And it's just him, like, throwing it in a sack and, like, burying it out in the, in the Forever Falls, like, somewhere.
Hey, you bury this for me.
I don't even remember where it is, so I don't know how else I'm gonna find it.
It's like the opening of the original Jumanji. He's just out in the woods, tosses it in a hole.
Bertie Kimberlin, wishlist for things to have Shannon say at RTX.
Story.
It's the last place they'd look. It's the last place they'd look. Maybe you put it on one of the launching platforms in the forest.
Maybe it's
now
one
I
of,
don't know where it is.
Maybe it's one of those chess pieces that, like, just gets, you know, used during during orientation that just gets thrown into a storage closet for the rest of the year.
It's like the Room of Requirement, but it's all it's just chess pieces, and you have to find the one. You have to find the checker piece. It's the checker.
He's like, actually, it was my glasses. Those are probably
idea.
Buried under
buried
a rock.
With my body.
I was the relic. Although we do get him, again, assuming he is being honest in this moment, we do get confirmation that it's not, in fact, his staff, but that his staff has some tricks up its sleeve.
We got things to see still.
Is one of those tricks. He presses a button and a large head is projected from it.
Yes!
So, if that's not one of the tricks, I will be so disappointed.
If we don't see that before the end of the series.
We've been waiting for it for a while, though.
I'll be right? Really, like, upset. I'm a little upset.
I just have to say, I loved Lindsay's performance in this entire interaction. I have no further questions. It was just adorable.
And then the anime laugh it off.
like the only way it could have been more anime is if it was like a freeze frame.
Don't like, you?
Like the credits start rolling immediately afterwards. But then they get a call from Lionheart, who's like, yeah, let's get a group together and go attack that troop of bandits. Yeah, that thing you wanted to do. I'm totally down now, guys.
Look, everyone.
Definitely above board. That
great
sounds.
News. The Howard, super down with it. So just, you guys want to come over?
Let's chat about it, you know.
Yeah.
Some coffee.
Come alone. Leave your weapons at home. Why bring them?
I mean, we're all friends here. We're all friends. We're just gonna chat. It's no big deal.
Cake.
Becca Lye says, no, Megan, it turns into a curtain rod so he can hide behind a curtain.
That's even better.
And then project the head. Missed.
You're right. I am so wrong.
Beautiful.
Oh. But so for this, you know, we get Lionheart and Raven having this scene together, talking about, I suppose, the morality of their actions. This sort of puts a little bit of a kink in my theory that Raven might have been coming to warn Crow.
Yeah.
Sort of puts a kink in that, unless she left a note for him somewhere that, like a post-it to his door.
<As he's walking>.
Not Penny's boat!
Boo. But imagine just on the window just tapping, like, a don't listen to the following phone call ring. That's weird.
That's super weird.
Mighty peculiar.
So it's entirely possible that she did leave a warning, but I feel like this interaction sort of puts a chink in that little theory. But oh, go ahead.
Oh no, just Raven's out for Raven.
Yeah, and we do get this interesting sort of philosophical approach to it. Lionheart views this as an act of cowardice, whereas Raven views it as like, nah, this is what you got to do to survive. There's no shame in that. Do we feel like, because we still don't know a ton about both of their backstories, do we feel like both opinions are sort of valid stances, or even though it goes contrary to what our heroes are trying to accomplish?
mean, I think they're valid. I don't necessarily think they're right.
It's like, that's an opinion.
It's an opinion. They probably both feel it, truly.
From a certain point of view. to go back to Star Wars for a moment. But yeah, while they may be valid, I mean, every villain thinks that they're the most correct person in the room. And it's interesting to get that perspective, despite the fact that, like, everybody is strong in their convictions, but because I was going to say they're absolutely confident in what they have to think, but they're still a little hesitant at how other people are going to take it.
And also, take what Raven says with a grain of salt, because her actual plan is, maybe you'll all kill each other while I'm going to go get the relic.
I'm going to peace out.
Raven, out. Yeah. Do we have any final thoughts before we go into some predictions?
Not before getting into predictions.
No, I think.
All right, let's do some rapid fire predictions since we're running out of time.
After Buzz TV predictions.
All right, have you both seen Chapter 11?
Yes.
Okay, then any thoughts for like the rest of the series as a whole?
I feel we're going to be spending a lot of time in a single room.
Oh, snap. Is it a hospital bed? Oh,
that's not a room.
Okay, not spoiler. I think, after that phone call, I think Crow's smarter than that, right? Like,
I would hope so.
Or is definitely not as trusting as that.
They're definitely like, that's not
like
normal.
Hold on.
They're going to be like, oh, a trap. We never suspected it.
What? And also, most of the available hunters and huntresses are super not available on account of being dead. So, yeah, I feel like it's very apparent that something's up and they're not going to walk into this unprepared.
Mm. So I think, you know, it's not all as it seems on that front.
Yep. I'm waiting for the moment where Blake arrives on a ship a la Aragorn in Return of the King. That's the moment I'm waiting for.
The eagles are coming!
I will say, after this last episode, I welcome the eagles.
All right.
For some eagle action.
I think that just about does it. Any other final comments before we wrap on up?
I'm ready to see them all fighting together again.
Yeah. I'm ready for Team Ruby to be reunited. I'm sorry, Mark. I know this is so painful for you.
How dare they? Anyway.
All right, Mark, where can people go if they want to find you?
You can find me on Twitter at MarkBidonica. You could also follow the team at ABTV Rooster Team. That's where we post sort of group updates, stuff about the show. If we have guests, if we're doing special things like playing Ruby Grim Eclipse. If you want to go and check out both parts of that, you go to twitch.tv/inventoryfullpt. We're trying to figure out a way to do more stuff with all of our assembled shows, so to speak, and just sort of make it a splinter so that we can play video games with cool people. And if you like video games, Stacey and I do the talk show regularly, and this next Monday is going to be a big sort of end of the year. Not necessarily our game of the year talk, but a lot of it. So, Mark Bidonica for me, ABTV Rooster Team for the entire team, and Inventory Full PT if you like video games.
Indeed. Hey guys, I'm Stacey Shuttleworth. You can find me on Twitter, Twitch, Instagram, all over the place, at Stacey Shuttles, or over at Inventory Full PT, where I play lots of games and cry about them.
That sounds about right.
It's pretty accurate.
Be sure to follow Patrick at P to the D's and Katie at Kia J. And I'm Megan Salinas. You guys can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at The Menguin. That's THEMENGUIN. Thank you guys so much again to Jester's chessboard for the wonderful art. Thank you to everybody in the live chat and the hashtag.
Yeah.
You guys are phenomenal. Thank you guys so much. We will see you all next week.
For tears.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
See you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.